Hey guys, welcome to Taking Stock. Super excited for you all to listen to this discussion today. We've been hyping this for a while. Real excited to welcome Tom Finnegan and Neil Nelson to our discussion today. Tom and Neil are two of the co-founders of Clarkston almost 30 years ago. I learned a ton through this conversation, and I'm pretty sure you will as well. They're going to talk about the idea of Clarkston Consulting. So they were working for a big consulting firm, and saw something in one another, saw something in the market that said, let's go do this. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about the early days, how they strategically thought through the business, talk about some of the key decisions they made in those early days, and some of what they were looking for as they were hiring people to join the firm. They'll talk about some of those foundational principles that have lasted for almost 30 years. And those core values and some of the, again, the key decisions that they've made as the firm has evolved through the years. We'll also talk about business transformation through times of change. Obviously, we're living within the midst of great change and uncertainty right now with the coronavirus. So we'll talk a little bit about some of that and how some of those lessons learned through the years have positioned Clarkston to be able to deal with the situation we're currently dealing with. And then we'll talk about creating a legacy and some of the things that Tom and Neil are hoping for as we look 30 years down the road. So enjoy the discussion. I certainly did, and I think you'll really get a kick out of it. Hey guys, welcome to Taking Stock.
Good morning.
Yeah, hey, good morning. Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, my pleasure. So really looking forward to this conversation. So before we get into the details, Neil, for everyone listening, what part of Michigan are you from?
I am from Clarkston, Michigan.
Clarkston, Michigan. Great. And Tom, what part of Maryland are you from?
I'm not from Maryland. I grew up in New York. And then now I'm down in Raleigh-Durham.
So all right, correct me then. So share with me your linkage back to Maryland.
So I went to school at Johns Hopkins, which is in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And I stayed there after I graduated and lived there for a few years while I worked out of a consulting firm in D.C.,
All right, so get to the linkage, please. Somehow, you have to see where I'm going with this. Somehow get to a city in Maryland for us.
Well, I'm in Baltimore.
Yeah.
How about that?
Okay. Somehow get to Potomac for us.
There were a few of us working out of the Washington, D.C. office of Anderson.
Okay.
Which is on the Potomac River.
Okay. There you go. Thankfully. It took us a while to get there. But for everyone listening, I believe that's how we got the Clarkston Potomac Group. Is that right?
It wasn't quite as direct, even though you were got us there on an indirect path. we could have been Visions and Systems Group if Neil had his way.
It would have served
us well.
We
did decide. That's right. We were all pretty much in agreement that we weren't going to use our names in the name of the company.
Okay.
Thank God. Because, you know, one of the founders left pretty quickly, so we would have had to rechange our name. So
we are the Clarkston Potomac Group, and then obviously we morphed into Clarkston Consulting. But it's amazing, guys, how many people who work for Clarkston and our clients don't realize. First off, they're not even familiar with Clarkston, Michigan. But I thought everyone would enjoy knowing that is, at least is how the name was founded.
Yeah, and Tom's leaving one part of the story out. So the first job that we did, we were all in the Potomac region, doing some work for Marriott Corporation, which is headquartered down in, I guess it's Bethesda, Maryland. So we were all physically there, which was kind of a key part of it as well. So
got it. Thank you, Neil. I will direct all those questions to you in the future.
Yeah, I think
appreciate you being more concise and realizing where I was going with that.
Yeah, I think Tom just enjoyed seeing you suffer, and I enjoyed it for a while myself.
I'm sure a lot of listeners will as well.
The other thing too, though, all our competitors at the time had these kind of two-word, you know, they were all private consulting, you know, so it was, you know, Price Waterhouse, Ernst & Young, you know, Coopers and Librant. So when we built our name, knowing that's who we were going to compete, we kind of had that, needed that 1-2 punch name.
Yeah.
To just at least make us sound a little more consistent with those other firms. I have no idea if it worked or not, but we seem to have gotten a few jobs in the early days.
Yeah, I think it's worked. Okay. So take us back. I'll say
one other thing though. Yeah. We agonized over the name for far too long, but you can't file to incorporate because number one on the questionnaire is name.
Yeah.
So we're finally like, let's just pick a damn name and go. And so that kind of accelerated the final result on that.
Yeah, it was funny because it would start off, it would be kind of early on in the agenda when we'd sit down for our planning meetings, and we couldn't decide on anything. And then as meetings continued, it would fall back to the final agenda item. So we would time box it and always spend so much time on it. And I tell you, it had to be on an agenda at least 10 times.
I would like to see a list of all the potential names that you guys ran through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And all the former logo efforts as well. They're pretty entertaining.
Well, that I've seen a lot of those a lot through the years. Okay. So take us back to the late 80s. You guys, as you mentioned, you're working at a big consulting firm. Talk about you guys personally. Do you guys remember the first time you met? You guys were working together on a project. Talk a little bit about just the start of your guys' working relationship.
Yeah, I correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, but I think we first met, or at least my first memory of us meeting, was obviously at Marriott Corporation. We're in the DeCoverly building on our project with a big name consulting firm. And we met in the break room when we were giving the SAP R2 4.2 training manuals and told that we had 2 weeks to learn how to become experts in the system and prepare to join the implementation team.
I think you're right. You don't forget the detail that those training manuals were in German.
That's right. I think Bob Turner, our partner at the time, gave us both a German to English dictionary to help us get through the.
He did. That was his level of sympathy, and he said, "Figure it out."
Yeah, and he turned around and left.
Yeah, he was a remarkable man for sure. So I had been on that project for a while. I was part of the team that actually did the software selection. So I was out of the DC office, so it was a DC project. But we just did not have a lot of skill in that technology throughout the firm. So we had to reach out to Chicago, where one of the original consultants had the skill, Detroit, because of some of the work that they had done at Dow, and then I believe the Philly office, because of some of the work they did for another chemical company there. So we were assembling some people, none of which really had much experience with the technology. And as we just talked, you know, we got the manuals in German. And the level of specialization wasn't there that there is today. We were expected to know the whole package.
Yep.
Which is a lot for a couple of, 23-year-olds to know, or however old we were, 22-year-olds.
So how long did you guys work on this project together? And at what point did you guys start to have those side conversations where, hey, I think there's something either that you saw in one another or you saw in the market that said, hey, I think there's an opportunity for us to do something.
So do you remember when you arrived on the project, Neil? I can tell you, I know the exact go live date.
Oh, that's funny. So that's good, because I don't remember the go live date, but I do remember when I arrived. I arrived in the summer of 1989. It was probably July when I joined the project team, and we met in that break room. And I think it was a year and a half that we were on the project together.
Well, yeah. So July of 89 was when you arrived. We get handed 3-ring binders in German to learn the technology. The go live date was like literally the day my daughter was born. my daughter was born on April 3rd, and our go live date was April 1st.
Okay.
Of 90.
Yep.
So, you know, whatever, 8 months. And you think about the scope of that project with such little inbound knowledge and our ability to pull that off was unprecedented under today's projects.
Yep.
Yeah. And on top of that, probably greatly underestimated, right? I think people did not understand what the software package was or what it was capable of, right? ERP as a term wasn't even coined for a few years until a few years after that by Gartner. So I think when we got into it and the timeline was set, and when Tom and I and others sat down to do our training, people just didn't realize how complicated and sophisticated the software package was.
Thank God we had no idea what we were doing.
Yeah, we probably would have bolted out the front door and never come back.
We would have. We would have been like, no way.
Yeah, that's true.
So were you guys were equally placing a bet on each other and others in those early days, but you were also placing a bet on, you mentioned, Neil, that ERP wasn't even coined. You guys were placing a bet on SAP. So talk a little bit about just kind of the idea.
Well, we didn't have the idea when we were there together. There were pieces of the idea maybe that formed, but really it didn't come together until, you know, that project completed. Neil went on to another project. I went on in Michigan. I went on to another project in New York.
Okay.
Right. So it was the second version, and that's, you know, we obviously kept in touch. And then that, it was during that second project where we said, wait a second, this thing's going to stick and maybe we can do this better.
Yeah. That's interesting. So Tom, I'm sure you remember this, so the idea of it happened, I would say, in the late evenings after client work was done at Marriott when our office mate would leave, and at about 7 o'clock, we would get the whiteboard and start charting up ideas for what we could do, like how we could develop or build the professional services business and kind of do some things in a different way, you know, leveraging this piece of business software that was going to change the business world.
Yeah. So it's talk a little bit though about, I keep digging into this and I hope you guys aren't trying to avoid it. I'm curious what you guys saw in one another. Everyone who knows you guys are, there's a very similar in terms of kind of principles, a lot of kind of like foundational aspects of you guys, very, very similar, but you're also very different and have complementary skills. Like, talk a little bit about what you guys saw in one another that said, okay, this is the person who I want to partner with and go into business with.
Yeah, so I'll try to answer that, Tom. You can pitch in. We won't avoid you anymore, Steve.
Thanks.
So I think what you said is right. I think it's interesting, our relationship. Tom and I clearly have some shared values, some really strong shared values that had us, you know, bond very quickly on the project, on the team, and start thinking about how we could create Clarks. And I think, you know, both of us have a very strong entrepreneurial spirit. Mm-hmm. We both had this vision of wanting to do kind of our own thing and create our own business someday. It happened for us a lot faster than I think either one of us thought. But that was certainly a shared value. I think both of us very hardworking and diligent in what we do. I think also ultra competitive, Tom. I don't know if we ever admitted to this, but I think we used to race to see who could get into the office faster and who would stay later at Marriott back in the early days. And I think both of us just, you know, have a very high regard for, I would say, for professionalism. And that was something that just really helped us bond right away.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, what do you think? I mean, I'd echo all of that. I think too, we realized that whereas we had a lot of shared values, we also had some different skills also. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it was a good mix. I think we would learn later how important that was. At the time, I don't really know that we fully appreciated the differing skill sets that need to come together to make a great business.
Yeah. I mean, and how could you at that point? Right. I think to Neil's point, what tied you guys together were those, you know, those value sets that you guys hold. And then probably part of the reason why we have remained as successful as we have is your ability to realize those complementary skills and to realize, okay, early on, you know, perhaps Neil, you have an acumen and affinity that's more suited towards this discipline that's required in starting a business. And Tom, there's aspects of your work style and your personality that allowed us to kind of go in different directions as well.
Yeah, I think that's well put. I think the way I've always seen it, Tom, between the two of us, Tom, I give Tom all the credit in the world. I think his vision and ability to kind of think ahead in the future, kind of, you know, set the BHAG, right? Be the inspiration for us to chase something that is truly special. I think he's been able to do that for us since day one. I think I've always kind of been the guy that was a little bit more practical minded, and once we set the destination, I'm like, okay, I'm already trying to figure out how we're going to get there, right? Like, I'm the planner. What's the plan? How are we going to make this thing happen?
Yeah. So let's go back to those early days, and or maybe even day one. Like, talk a little bit about what that looks like. And I've always been curious how much of the business was strategically planned versus how much of it was, hey, you know, let's just go make something happen and see what sticks to the wall. Talk a little bit about some of those early days and the strategic planning that you guys put forth.
Yeah, I think we might surprise you, Steve, based on what your expectations probably are. I would say our planning efforts were far more extensive than what you probably think.
Okay.
Kind of going back to those evening sessions in our office room that we had at in the DeCoverly building, to all the offsite meetings that we had either in Tom's house in Baltimore, one of the other founders' apartments. I think we probably planned the business time for over a year.
Wow.
before we actually launched it.
Okay. Tom, what do you think?
There was definitely a lot of, and of course there was really no computers or printers at the time. So it all kind of came out on this dot matrix printer.
Mm-hmm.
So there was definitely, quite a bit of that. I think when I go back and look at some of those early plans, there were details in there that turned out to fill paper and not be particularly practical. And then some other things that I don't really know were existent. But we spent a lot of time, and there were a lot more people that we were trying to bring into our, you know, three-ring circus to get started than actually ended up joining or starting, which I think actually that also was a good thing.
So let's jump forward to that a little bit. So obviously, one of the many things that I've learned from you guys is that we're only going to be as good as any professional services firm is only going to be as good as our people. So talk about the process of hiring the right people, some of those early hires, and what were some of the key characteristics you were looking for? Was it you needed and wanted people who kind of fit the mold that you had defined, or were you looking for people who would challenge you and people who would perhaps provide a different point of view that perhaps you guys were bringing to the table? Talk about some of those early hires.
Yeah. So one of the things that did come out of the business planning process that was, I would say, super valuable and that we've actually held on to until this day is the development of some core values. Yep. And quite honestly, they haven't really changed much since back in since we created them back in 1990. So I think a lot of what we were looking for was alignment on those key core values, mm-hmm. in the professionals that we brought in to join us, back in the early days.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. That when we look back to the original planning, that's the stuff has stuck. But those first couple of hires, Steve, were a matter of, I've just sold a job and I've got to get the job delivered. It was more like that than it was. Cause we had a number of people when we were going to start the business. And when we finally got to the point where this business is going to, there were more people planning than there were actually doing. Who started it. And we had a meeting at the house I was renting in New York, and we knew one of the guys was flying in from Switzerland. And we said, all right, he's an expensive ticket. We're going to put his receipt in the fishbowl on the dining room table. And if it's just the two of us, we're going to split it in half. And then Neil said, well, I'll come in from Michigan. So we'll say, well, we'll put your receipt in the, so it was, okay, whoever shows up, put your receipts in the table and we'll divide by the number of people at the table. And that's ultimately how we ended up with four people starting the business. And there were four partners. So when you talk about our first hires, the ratio of the partners to the people we were hiring. So we weren't looking for more partners or people who had the particular skills, sort of partner level skills, not that any of us really had partner level skills at the time, but we were in that role. You can argue some. We still don't have them, but we're working on them. We're working hard. But we needed people to help us execute the work that we were starting to sell. And we needed people that were consistent with those core values and we knew could learn and grow, because nobody in the market had the skills that we were selling at the time. And so not only did we have to sell the work without the people with the skills, but we had to develop the people, in a very short order in order to get the jobs and deliver on our client commitments.
Yeah, I'm, as you guys know, 12 and a half years into my Clarkston career and still amazed at how we will never make a hire if we feel that in any way that person is going to compromise our core values. So that's certainly something that was foundational when we started the firm. Is there anything, as you guys look back in those early days, that you say now retrospectively, we wish we would have done differently? Is there anything that regret is a really, really tough word, but is there anything that you said we would have been perhaps more successful in those early years if we would have done something different?
Yeah. There's one that I would say, Steve, that's related to how we recruited and how we grew in the early days. We started off and it was in the right spirit, right? Our spirit was, hey, we're only going to take on jobs and deliver for clients where we know we can be successful. But our early days of growing and recruiting was to go out and find experienced professionals that had experience in consulting and experience working with the SAP software, which was our focus in the early days. Mm-hmm. And of course, that didn't exist.
Right.
And so we watched some other companies grow a lot faster. They obviously compromised, I think, the teams that they staffed on some of their projects as a result of that. But I wish we would have, the apprentice model that we've put in place for Clarkson that we thrive on today, I wish we would have figured that out sooner. I think it would have allowed us to grow a little bit faster in the early days and serve more clients early on.
Yeah, that's a great feedback. And certainly, you think, again, the idea that part of what makes Clarkson really successful today, while it took us a while to get there, but our ability to bring people at a younger age and groom them and develop them internally, those are often some of our absolute best stewards. So it certainly has become a kind of a principle of Clarkson.
I'm sorry, Tom, go ahead. I was going to say it's something actually that I think even today we can do a better job with. I mean, you're struggling to find some skills in some areas that you're selling today, mm-hmm. and had we you know, taken a 3 to 5 year, you know, let's develop people from scratch early on to get them to the spot where you are now, we would just have a much bigger pipeline of people for that. So it's one of those like lasting things that was actually a page out of the Anderson playbook that we took. You know, they used to send their people up to outside of Chicago to St. Charles for training. And we liked that model. We didn't deploy it. I mean, we have it and we've had it now for 20 years, but you know, we didn't deploy that right away. It took us a little while to start doing that in mass. That clearly is a great way to develop talent over the years.
So we are in the early days, and for the first, you know, few years of the firm, we are, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but chasing ERP, SAP, delivering brilliant client service across multiple industries. At some point, a decision is made that we need to focus, and we feel that we can differentiate around industry expertise. Talk a little bit about why we felt that that was important, and then how we ultimately came down to focus on the industries we currently serve.
Your statement's in part true. I mean, we had been doing other things in the 90s. You know, one of the first CRM projects we did, it was back, they used to call it SFA.
Okay.
You know, it was in the mid 90s. And we had done quite a bit of work for, you know, putting technology into the field of marketing and sales in those early days. But what happened to us that really caused us to evaluate our strategy was Y2K. Okay. So when Y2K happened, everybody stopped doing these transformational projects, these ERP projects, these we're going to, you know, fully automate our sales force and stuff like that. And we were getting an awful lot of negative feedback from industry experts and this and that, saying, well, you know, if this technology goes away, you're in a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. And so we really evaluated, do we want to be a company that is tied to a particular technology or two or three, or do we want to pivot? And the models we looked at, it wasn't just be a technology focused consulting firm or be a vertical. We also evaluated regions, because there were some regional consultancies that did everything for everyone in a particular geography. So they pegged clients within a 15-mile, 20-mile, 50-mile, 100-mile range, and that was kind of how they went to market. So we looked at geography. We looked at technology led. We looked at vertically led. Mm-hmm. And then we went through a selection process to decide which model do we want to pursue. And then once we picked the model, which then we, you know, we picked the vertical industry vertical, and then which industry verticals do we want to go do? So,
yep.
But it was a strategy project. That really we did. We had an outside strategy firm help us, but it was one we certainly were heavily invested in.
So Neil, what do you recall from that process, and then any perspective you could share in terms of how we came to the industries we decided to serve?
Yeah, I guess you know, for me it ties back a little bit to kind of a fundamental thing for us in terms of how we want to go to market and what kind of consulting firm, you know, we've always wanted to be, which, you know, we follow the value discipline, customer intimacy. And I think what we realized was, for us to be most successful in being able to serve our clients and be intimate with their, you know, their challenges and their opportunities, was to really know their business. You know, being technicians and understanding how to configure a system, it doesn't allow you to know your client's business the same way. So I think that was, for me, you know, kind of the driving force for why we did what we did. And I say we have that to thank, quite honestly, for really our success. It's the biggest, by far, it's the biggest difference in our business today than when we started the firm back in 1991.
Sure. Yeah, clearly. You know, our view is the fundamental thing, you know, CPG companies, they need to get closer to the customer, closer to the consumer, innovate new products, figure out their supply chain. You know, those core fundamental business challenges are the same for Procter & Gamble today than they were in 1908. You know, some nuances that are different, but that sort of at the 30,000 foot level, they're kind of the same. But the processes and the technologies and the methods that they go about today are very different than they did 100 years ago. And so we feel that there's some sustaining reasons why industries thrive over time. And for us to be experts in that, we feel like we can learn the different methods, the different technologies, you know, and or innovate in those.
Yep. So I want to talk a little bit about business transformation. Tom, you referenced Y2K. If you think about certainly over, you know, almost 30 years now, there have been some big events in the world that have forced you as leaders to help manage a firm through times of change, whether it was, you know, 9/11, the Great Recession, or obviously what we're going through right now with coronavirus. So talk a little bit about how do you remain a calming voice during those times of change and uncertainty? And how do you manage the business through those times while the train is still moving, right? How do you evolve and manage and provide reassurance while still needing to deliver for our clients?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, the first thing in my playbook is to not panic, which is not easy, right? And, or at least don't show fear. You may feel fear, but you can't show it. And part of what I've always done is to remember that, you know, it's bigger than you, right? Like it's, you know, we're about serving a greater purpose with our clients and with our people. And personally, as a leader, when I can focus on that, I forget about the personal impacts, and it motivates me to help lead the organization and try to be that calming voice.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Since day one, we've always put our clients and our stewards first. And when, you know, even in the early days, we were, you know, we did not pay ourselves salary in order for us to ensure that the people that we hired would have a steady salary, would have steady pay. You know, it took us years before we really felt comfortable actually giving ourselves an actual salary. And so that philosophy from day one, we've kind of carried forward. There were times you know, we had managed, the other thing too, is we managed the business 27 quarters. Every quarter was a growth quarter from the previous quarter until the third quarter of 99, when our clients stopped doing these transformational projects and redirected everything to Y2K. So we never knew how to manage a business in a down cycle. Mm-hmm. It was a new experience for us. And we learned more, I think, between June of 1999 and June of 2000, I think was the most valuable learning year for me personally. I learned what a balance sheet is. I learned what cash flow is. We learned how to manage a down cycle. Unfortunately, we had to go through a layoff during that period. We learned how to raise outside private equity. And then shortly thereafter, after Y2K, the dot-com bubble burst, you know, in early 2000. So mm-hmm. all of that, you know, and all of those competitors that had ramped up their teams faster than we did went out of business at the lower peer group, I'll call them boutique consultancies. They all went under in 2000, you know, some made it into 2001, but then were wiped out after 9/11. So we just learned an awful lot about actually how to be managers. You know, 90s was about selling work, doing work, growing, you know, people, hiring good people. But that next couple of years was all about, we actually had to manage. And we learned a ton, you know, made a bunch of mistakes during that time too. Sure. Like we clearly were not perfect.
But I mean, you can't plan for that type of thing. You need to experience it.
Yeah.
There's no way for you to plan for some of these things.
That's right. Now we did, you know, rely on and have great relationships, even with some of our competitors. So there was another firm that we got to know, another ex Anderson partner. He started a firm out of Chicago, and I got to know him really well. And I think he took a little bit of pity on me because I was this 20-something guy trying to compete with, you know, 50-year-old firms that were tens of thousands of employees at the time. So I think he viewed me as the son he didn't have that didn't go into the business with them, and just gave me a ton of advice along the way. So we had good, you know, outside network supporters where we could get where we could bounce ideas off and stuff like that.
Yeah. So if you look over the span again of a 30-year span, we talked a little bit about evolution in terms of where we focus as a business and becoming more industry focused. Talk a little bit about individual stewards. I mean, there are, you know, one of the wonderful things about Clarkston is the tenure of a lot of our stewards and the people who've been here for a long, long time and have truly made, you know, Clarkston their career. But if you look at a lot of those folks, they've evolved. And what they were doing certainly 20 years ago is vastly different than what they're doing today. You know, talk a little bit about kind of the evolution of skills, not as a firm, but as individuals. And how do we motivate stewards to continually kind of challenge the status quo and to continually kind of think about how they evolve their skills?
Yeah, I think one of the important things, Steve, is that, you know, this is an area where you have to lead by example, right? And as Tom just mentioned, you know, we've been learning, you know, since day one on how to, you know, grow and build a business like Clarkston. And I think you got to remember that it's important that we're learning ourselves new skills every day. You have to keep growing. So I think showcasing that in front of our stewards, I think, you know, calling out some of the success stories. I've always been a big believer in, you know, you praise in public and you criticize in private, you know, celebrating skill development and success with your stewards and doing that in front of others. That helps make it contagious. And helps the firm grow.
Yeah, I'd add that what's been a fascinating view in our journey is that, you know, we've been doing management consulting in some respect since the 90s. We've done some interesting management consulting projects in the 90s. We did some interesting in the early 2000s. But it wasn't until a few years ago that we really got our management consulting and operations consulting practices off the ground. And in large part, it's because of the experience level of our senior team. And we've grown up, and that the relationships, you know, we finally now have some folks that have been with us for crossing over 25 years now, which is pretty amazing. And their peers that they grew up with professionally are now in executive positions. Mm-hmm. And it's, at the end of the day, people buy consulting services from people they know and trust. And it takes a long time for an institution like Clarkston to build that level of client relationship. And that is now starting to come to be. And that flywheel at that level is starting to really kick in. And that's been, I think, the most fun thing for me to watch these sort of partners today. When we hired them right out of school 25 years ago, to see how they've evolved into being very comfortable advising CEOs and EVPs and general managers of companies and how they can optimize their business.
Do you guys, are continually pushing for more and what's next, but do you ever have the opportunity to kind of sit back and reflect and take pride in what you guys have created? I know neither of you are going to want to jump on that.
Yeah,
I'll push a little bit further. But I mean, I've heard the story, and it's one of those kind of Clarkston legend stories. So I didn't even get the Potomac part of it right. So this might also be incorrect. But I've heard the story. It was a wedding early days. And it was, a Clarkston steward was getting married. And there were a lot of Clarkston families at the wedding. And a story goes as such that one of you was just, that was just kind of like an aha moment for you. We're like, oh, wow, this is the Clarkston family. Like I'm created this, responsible for this. Did I get any part of that story right?
Yeah, if you might be telling one of my stories.
Okay.
And I remember looking at the wedding party. The bride was a former Clarkston employee. The groom was still a Clarkston. The best man was the brother-in-law of the sister who was both of them in Clarkston. Then there was another sister-in-law on the other side in the wedding party, was working in our accounting group at Clarkston. And I just remember sitting there saying, oh my God, half the wedding party works for, like, we're responsible for this family's income. And, I turned to Lisa at the time and I was like, oh my God, like, this is a lot. And I just felt that, you know, that was a wow moment for me for sure. When I was looking at that, just that sense of responsibility that we have for, lives, not just, sort of work income there, but it was like what we're doing is impacting families.
Neil, are there any moments through your Clarkston career or any kind of feelings now that have just kind of like those aha moments for you?
Well, there's, and I've lost count, and Tom, maybe you remember, but I guess on a similar note, just the look at the Clarkston marriages that have occurred, right? Like how many, not only are we providing, careers and paychecks for our stewards, but they're finding their life partners. And it's just been like amazing to me to see that happen and be able to step back and just kind of take joy in knowing that our firm was part of these people coming together.
Yeah. It's pretty special, on so many levels.
So let's kind of close with this. So looking 30 years ahead, or whatever time frame, what do you guys, in your mind, what do you hope Clarkston's enduring legacy will be? Obviously kind of the commitment to our core values, but what do you want that enduring legacy to be?
Yeah, I'll go first. So, I would say it's this built to last is what we're hoping for. And we've never wanted to be the biggest in the marketplace, but I think we've always felt like we want to be the best at what we do in terms of serving our clients and serving our people. I hope our legacy is that we maintain that, we continue that, the same core values. I think core values are timeless. Obviously, the business needs to evolve. You know, our leadership needs to evolve, the services that we provide, but things like the Win3 model, you know, what we stand for, you know, that's something that that I hope will continue, you know, well past when we are gone.
That's great.
Yeah, I'd certainly echo that. The you know, where we are today is a generational transfer. And, you know, we could, and we get offers all the time to sell the business. We are a sought after firm for other companies to buy us. We've got something special. And we don't sell the business. There are a few of us that would do pretty well if we did. Mm-hmm. However, what we want to do is build this firm that sustains sort of generational ownership control over time and remains a private company that genuinely can be interested in our clients and our stewards. And going from first generation ownership to second generation ownership is a challenge. But then, as you suggest, 30 years out, it's that next generation. And that's where, you know, some of the big private companies have been able to do that. In other cases, they've, you know, they've either gone public or they've sold out in other ways. And at that point, really, it's not an employee-owned company. It is a, it's an outside, you know, institutional investor-owned company. And the priorities, as a result, have to change. And we just don't want to compromise those priorities. We really want to be a company that can place our clients and our people first.
That's incredibly well said, both. And let me close in saying, not just on behalf of me, but also on behalf of our firm, and not just our stewards today, but the stewards who've worked for Clarkson for almost 30 years. Thank you. Thank you for being the ones to step forward and to have the courage to fail and taking the risk to start Clarkson. Thank you for your leadership through the years. And you should take a lot of pride in what you guys have built. And I know that every steward who has worked at Clarkson takes a ton of pride in the firm that we are. So thank you both very much also for taking the time to chat today. This was a ton of fun for me. It's clear I learned a lot as opposed to, you know, again, thinking back to some of the stories that we have all heard through the years. I'm glad we were able to clarify some of them. And the narrative that you guys provided was really, really fascinating to learn from. So thank you both very, very much.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
And thanks, Neil.
Thanks, Tom.
Have a great day, guys.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. So that was a ton of fun. I liked at one point how Tom said you're partially true, which is a very gentle way of saying you're mostly incorrect. So thank you, Tom, for that. Obviously, my whole setup of Clarkston, Michigan and Potomac, Maryland, that was a giant fail. And I appreciate Tom making me squirm and feel uncomfortable for a couple of minutes at the beginning of the discussion, as only he could. But what a fun discussion. Just a ton of fun to listen to their perspective. And I know that I continually learn from them, and I think we all could. So thank you for listening, and looking forward to future discussions with other thought leaders within Clarkston and within the industry. Have a great day, and we'll talk soon.